Today is May 15th, 2010, and this is episode 4 of FatCast. I'm Leslie Kinzel of FatChinista.com, and as always, joining me is Marianne Kirby of TheRotund.com. This is part 1 of a 2-part conversation about fatchin plus sizes and how Marianne is still very angry at Old Navy. In the interest of full disclosure, we actually recorded this podcast a week ago, but owing to some busy weekends coming up, we've recorded some of these in advance to keep up our weekly release schedule. Hello, this is episode 4 of FatCast. We are talking today about something a little more lighthearted than our last two episodes about the doctor. Today we want to talk about where plus sizes begin and how fatchin is sort of a political idea. And where do we want to start with this, Marianne? I mean, there's so much in this subject that I know both you and I have powerful feelings about.
I know we do. I feel so full of topics right now. I think we probably want to start with a basic definition of what constitutes plus size. I know when people are talking to me about definitions of fat, because height and weight and body constitution and all of that are so variable, I tend to fall back on retail. plus sizes for me start at gray area 12, mm-hmm. a 14, you know, because you can sometimes special order a plus size 12. Mm-hmm. And that tends to be my sort of real world everyday definition of fat. I mean, Hollywood fat and model fat are different kinds of fat. There's a special fat, and they start at different sizes, and only if you're 6 feet tall. But I'm 5'4". I'm a little bitter. So I tend to use the retail example, because even though there is variation in size from retailer to retailer, sometimes within the same damn pair of pants, it's a good sort of rule of thumb, I think.
Yeah.
And that whole area is kind of weird, because you can get those sizes in some straight size stores, but yeah.
Yeah. I sort of think of it similarly. I tend to look at it. I look at it really almost from an experiential perspective, that I feel like plus sizes begin with the realization that, wow, I can no longer go into most straight size stores and find something that fits me.
Yeah.
Which is a much vaguer sort of line than what you're describing. But because plus sizes are sort of connected to, hang on one second, I have to cough. Okay, I'm back. Aren't you glad I muted that I can mute my cough? That's great.
I'm like, should I fill this dead air? Are we going to flip it out? What are we doing? I don't know. We didn't discuss this kind of situation, Leslie.
This is what happens when we're both having like respiratory issues. But yeah,
Florida is like exploding with pollen. It's disgusting.
Yeah. I have no pollen related excuse. I'm just getting over a cold. But yeah, no, I think of it more from that vague realization that, wow, the vast majority of clothing manufacturers no longer are interested in my business. That having that recognition of being sort of left out of mainstream fashion for me is really where becoming a plus size starts. And I know, I am aware that is much harder to measure than saying, oh, it starts at 16. And we had sort of this conversation much more passionately with people when we had the change in the Life Journal Fashionista, from where we changed the minimum size for outfit posts to, I think you had to be, we went from a 14 to having to be a 16.
Well, the rules were so much wishy-washier originally, because if you were really, really short, like a person who was 5 feet tall wearing a 12, mm-hmm. Sometimes we would let that through.
Mm-hmm.
But people were kind of angry that we didn't have a hard and fast, mm-hmm. rigid guideline, I guess.
And I think people were angry after we made the change because they felt like it still wasn't hard and fast enough. That I had conversations with people where, they would say, what about, X, Y, or Z, or what about, and I would say, I'm honest, it's a case-by-case basis,
yeah.
And we're going to tell by looking, because that's what we've always done. And I had a few people say, basically get outraged at how, that's awful, you're determining who is fat. And I remember saying, I don't know, I could lie to you and say that we have an elaborate scientific model that we use for every outfit post. But that's not true. Like, I kind of felt like saying, how do you think we do this? We look, yeah. at people, we take into consideration circumstances such as height or circumstances such as where the person lives. For example, a lot of people who live in Asia have way narrower concepts of what is fat, or actually I should say broader concepts of who is, yeah. anyway.
The line is much lower.
Right. People are considered fat at a much lower rate. And the clothing options are, much more slim for fat people. these are all things that we have to take into consideration.
I'm going to straight up call it out too. We had people posting who were not a size 14.
Yeah. We had people posting who were barely a 12.
They were saying, oh, it's an extra large or a 14 from Anthropology or whatever. So
we would basically have people who were like 5'9" and wearing a 10 posting up and saying, oh, it's so great to find this place where I'm finally accepted. And you know what? I think it's great that they felt that way.
Absolutely.
And I have little, and I'm not going to argue the idea that, yeah, I believe that maybe they were getting crap in other non-plus focused fashion communities on LiveJournal, where people were saying you're too hippie to wear that, or your ass looks big in that, or stupid ass comments like that. I believe that, but that still doesn't mean that Fashionista is the place for them to post.
Yes. And I think that it kind of, I think it highlights one of the really difficult discussions when you start talking about fat and where fat begins, because it is possible to be made to feel fat in America and other places around the world without having the lived experience of actually being fat.
Absolutely.
So if you're a size 8 and you live in Los Angeles, I 100% believe that you can have people mooing at you, but that doesn't mean you are actually a fat person. You have an experience that is awful and well worth talking about, but it is very different from the experience of somebody who does exist as a fat person. Mm-hmm. So,
well, because there's a difference between people simply calling you fat, and also not only have people calling you fat, but also have the realities of fat life, I guess, for lack of a better word, which includes things like, if you're
the best image of somebody with like fat life on their knuckles.
But you have used the example before about like if you go on vacation and your luggage gets lost.
Oh yeah, I'm fucked.
I'm just as fucked with you that yeah. that it's not like we can just run to a store and buy a pair of jeans and be okay. Because it's, that's a limitation that, is sort of placed upon us. Likewise with flying in the first place, that, you can have people, you can be, a 10 or a 12 and have people in your family telling you how fat you are, but you don't really have to go and get, you've never had the experience of getting on a plane and feeling terrified that someone is going to come and, at what point, like, am I too fat for this plane? And because all of those, that's an upcoming podcast.
Seriously.
On flying while fat. But, having to worry about stuff like that, having to worry about how much space you're taking up on a bus or in a tight space anywhere in public and, whether you're actually going to get actively harassed about that is a very different experience.
Yeah. Having to worry about whether there's going to be a massage table at the spa that supports your weight.
Or a table at the doctor's office.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. That was sort of a callback to our last episode.
Because when you sit on the edge of the table, it tips over. That's true, no matter whether it's a doctor's table or a massage table. Bolt that shit to the floor. Physics, people. So, and this is a case where physics is actually like a useful thing to call on. Not so much when you're talking about, calories in, calories out, but okay, I'm better now.
But yeah, so I think that the whole idea of, I mean, the whole idea of what counts as a plus size is incredibly subjective. And it is to some extent based on where you live and your personal circumstances. But at the same time, I mean, I sort of am pretty steadfast in arguing that one of the easiest measurements is the whole shopping thing, because plus sizes are, we're not necessarily trying to define fat when you talk about plus sizes, because there are people who wear a 16 who, look pretty, I mean, don't look like people that I would call, be totally comfortable calling fat. Because, they're just, or they're tall, or they're very proportional, or they don't seem to be a roly in any way. But
We
that.
talked about this a little bit with the Lane Bryant ad. Like, Ashley Graham is a plus size model and she's a very beautiful woman, but her body has way more in common with straight size bodies than it does with mine.
Exactly. It basically takes the same classic proportions and just grades them up a little bit. And so that's not really, I mean, and that was, I think, part of some of the shock and bafflement at holding that ad back, was that it really didn't look much different than your standard Victoria's Secret ad, except it's almost like they just took like Liquify in Photoshop and just stretched her out a little bit and
There's
just.
actually further discussion going on that it isn't necessarily just about her body, but about her being an agent of her own sexuality that makes the commercial seem so shocking and sexy.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. I actually did an interview about it with the I think it was a Palm Beach Post, I forget, last week. And that was one of the comments that I had made, was that, the Victoria's Secret ads, these women are purely decorative. They just sort of stand there and writhe around and have their hair get blown back. And there's no story. I mean, they're literally just sort of moving mannequins. Whereas the Lane Bryant ad is completely different, because this is a woman who has an agenda, basically.
There's a
She's
narrative.
going out in her fucking underwear to see whoever it is she's screwing.
His name is Dan. Says so in the text message. Meet Dan for lunch.
in underpants.
That's not part of the text message, but I guess it's
I
implied.
guess, yeah, maybe she added that later. But yeah, so I mean that is a critical, because it really does force us to sort of confront our assumptions about women's sexuality and what kind of sexuality is okay. And as I said, I actually used the word trampy in the Palm Beach Post interview. But where does that sort of cross a line? And I would argue that this commercial, it wasn't just about, oh, she's bigger, or oh, her boobs are so large. It was more about, this woman might come across to some folks as being oversexed and a tramp. And, we kind of have a problem with that, because it's not a portrayal of a woman, much less a woman who's larger than the norm, that
Yeah,
we're
it's
accustomed to
sexuality out
seeing.
of control.
Right, we're not used to seeing that. So women in Victoria's Secret lingerie humping air is A-okay, because we've seen that for years. Woman, going out to meet her whatever in her underpants is not okay, because wow, when have we seen that on TV lately?
I do want to say that this is relevant because we're talking about fashion as political. And this is one way in which, I mean, I don't go on TV in my underpants. I mean, I'm wearing underpants when I'm on TV, but I'm wearing other things as well.
I'm so glad you cleared that up, because I know that there are people out there watching you on television going, I wonder if Marianne is wearing underpants
I like to be
right
precise with these things sometimes. So, but it is all still political. I mean, this is a really good illustration of the way that women of fuller figure, to be euphemistic about it, are hypersexualized and seen as sort of out of control. Mm-hmm. And the narrative of the storyline, can I be any more redundant, English major? The narrative of the commercial and her body combined to like make people read some crazy stuff. I saw one interpretation online where they thought it was an adulterous sort of setup, and they were angry because the commercial was promoting adultery.
Wow.
Because the only way you could get a woman who looked like that to meet you for lunch in her underpants is if you were, like, engaged in an adulterous affair. Like, that kind of sex is always illicit, apparently.
That's interesting.
I thought so as well.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I gotta some sort of turn that over in my head for a minute.
That one kind of, like, baffled me for a minute, and... Well, I've seen it in a couple of places.
I think the idea of the out of control woman is pretty dead on, because we do have a habit of conflating appetites, and, you know, an appetite for food with an appetite for sexual relationships. And I think that those things culturally, even if not realistically, tend to be connected in people's minds. So the idea that, well, this woman is larger and has this sort of almost over-sexualized, you know, sinful shape that is more in fitting with maybe a pinup calendar than a standard classic model sort of role, I think that that kind of plays into people's minds that there must be something dirty about this that is... You know, this is not the sterilized, antiseptic, you know, totally unremarkable model shape that we're used to seeing. This is something that's out of control in every way, and there must be something filthy and horrible about it.
It kind of plays on our sort of national cultural guilt about enjoying ourselves.
It really does, yeah.
And I mean, food and sex, these are all sort of enjoyable things. Mm-hmm. And if you overconsume them, you will be... a fat adulteress
who likes sex.
I don't know. Who likes sex. And underpants. She had quite the collection.
She did. She had a lot of underpants.
There was a lot of wardrobe change.
One of the things that I had, I made a comment to this effect on Twitter, that I had said, you know, when did Lane Bryant get so fucking political? That, yeah. I mean, this is an incredibly politicized commercial, and I don't know if they entirely expected it to have the response. I know that they jumped all over it. Someone in their PR department was like, awesome, controversy, you know, because they made this huge deal about it.
Oh, yeah, they were giving away free panties.
Yeah, and you know, releasing all of the original documentation that they got from the networks. I mean, part of me sort of thinks maybe this was manipulative on their part from the jump, that they knew
then
that...
They did a really good job.
They did an extraordinary good job, and that was sort of where my shock came in, was that if this was something that was articulated and possibly intentional from the beginning, that's an incredibly politicized thing to do, to put this out and to know that you're gonna be this is gonna be so confrontational, and it's going to inspire such strong opinions from people.
Do you remember like 10 years ago when Lane Bryant had like Aretha Franklin and Tom Jones at their sort of yearly fashion show thing?
Yes.
I was working at Lane Bryant, and it's the reason I can't listen to Tom Jones sing Sex Bomb anymore. That was on the track every like 5 or 6 songs. And so like it's etched into my brain, those lyrics. But we had a TV set up in the store to show the fashion show. We had gold satin flare leg pants.
I remember those.
Oh, God, I love those pants.
I remember those pants vividly.
Yeah, I had, like, multiple pairs. And I still have a pair as, like, a souvenir pair of pants that hopefully one day I will be able to have somebody model a pair of pants that actually fits me on, like a seamstress, to make me these pants in my size. And even at the time, I mean, the models were wearing like gold sequin flare leg pants, mm-hmm. and slinky little things, and there was a lot of bustiers, and they were really pushing the whole fat women are vital, energetic, you know, sexy if they choose to be active women, because that was actually when there was a lot of swimwear and gym wear in the stores as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that vividly.
I got really disappointed because they eased away from all of that, and I would go back in and be like, why are there all of these polyester print dresses? I don't understand. And I feel that this sort of harkens back to that, I don't know, that spirit of Tom Jones in Lane Bryant.
No, I remember the sort of, I guess, hipping, I guess you could say. Hipstering?
The hippening?
Yeah, the hippening of Lane Bryant for that, you know, sort of brief period. And it was kind of an amazing thing because Lane Bryant had spent so many years as this awful, dowdy, you know, you only wear this shit until you lose weight and you can put on real clothes kind of apparel. And suddenly, out of nowhere, they exploded into this wild, and it went on for a few years, as I recall, where they had several seasons of, you know, these really sort of surprisingly attention-grabbing clothes. And I don't know if backing away from that was associated with them getting sold by charming shops. I know that Fashion Bug bought them eventually, and I know that once Fashion Bug bought them, everything started to go to hell.
When all of that was going on, they were still owned by The Limited.
Right. Okay, and so maybe it was when charming shops bought them that it started to go downhill.
I think it was, because it was The Limited and Victoria's Secret and Lane Bryant and mm-hmm. Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yep.
And Lane Bryant did not have the same, like, reputation. Yeah. They just didn't fit in with the brand.
Right.
You know, I mean, you walk into The Limited, you walk into Vicky's Secret or whatever, and they were revamping the underwear line at that point to bring it more in line with the stuff you could get at Victoria's Secret. And they started coming out with more lacy things and more things you would only wear for a little while.
It's a delicate way of putting it.
To be diplomatic about it.
Yeah.
That's when the panty tables started getting really crazy. But it was great because people responded to it. And I mean, people came in and were like, I cannot wear that. And then they tried it on and they were like, I would like this in many several colors.
And this is too, it's worth noting, this is before Torrid had come along and demonstrated that there was a market for trendier apparel in plus sizes. So I don't know. I assume Lane Bryant did some sort of market research that told them this would work and that there was a demand for it. I'm not sure why they backed away. I don't know if it was a question of the company being sold. I don't know what it was. But, you know, this was all of this happened. When all of this was happening, nobody had really done eye-catching. And by eye-catching, I mean in a good way, not in an, oh, my God, what a loud moo-moo way. Eye-catching fashions for fat women just weren't, it just wasn't something that existed. You just couldn't find them. And then Lane Bryant, all of a sudden, and it literally was like an overnight, it was like one season they were dowdy and awful, and then the next season suddenly it's like, you know, disco balls and thumping music and, you know, sequins and bustiers everywhere.
Lots of different textures. Like they went crazy with like the textures, because all of a sudden you could get not just bright colors, you could get bright colors in velvet and satin. Yep. And corduroy, and it was like a wonderland.
In my goth days, I had two satin bustiers from Lane Bryant that I used to wear clubbing.
Yeah.
I'll let people sort of imagine me goth wearing a satin bustier
so
at a nightclub. Just sort of let that gel in your imagination for a minute.
I did the same thing, but I still occasionally do the same thing, so I guess it's not as shocking to think about.
I can imagine Marianne doing that now.
I can imagine you doing that now, just in the corner, you know, saying very sharp, witty things.
With clove cigarettes.
Yeah. Oh, God, cloves.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved my cloves. And now I have asthma, so kids, don't smoke. Indeed.
Yes, don't smoke. And but you know what? I still have some of my clothes from Lane Bryant from 10 years ago. And people talk about how shitty Lane Bryant's clothes are. And I look in my closet and I kind of boggle. And I'm like, I also kind of boggle because it really lets me see how fucked up sizing is. Because I have a red iridescent satin mermaid skirt that is marked a goddamn 14/16. And it fits.
I had the same skirt. I know exactly what you're talking about. They made it in different colors, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it has almost like a shark skinny sort of shimmery effect.
Yes.
I wore the hell out of that skirt, man.
Yes. Great, great skirt.
Yep.
And the sizing is, it blows my mind because I am not a 14/16. Why does this skirt fit? It's not like I can make it grow through the power of my mind.
When I when we moved into our condo, we moved out of an apartment we'd been in for 6 years, and that apartment had, I think, like 5 closets. I'm not even joking, and 2 of them were huge walk-in closets. So I basically, the whole time we were living there, like every article of clothing I had bought since high school was with me. And when we moved from crazy closet town to awesome, beautiful condo on a beach, but that has like 2 very small closets. And I used the opportunity, well, I actually still went up buying a wardrobe from IKEA because I could not trim things down that much. But
you broke your closet.
Oh, well, that's something else that I will talk about in a little while. But yeah, so we went from, you know, having tons and tons of space to having pretty much no space. And in the process of moving, I opened boxes that I had that were sealed from the last time we had moved. So like 1999, basically. And I found, so like you said, so many clothes, almost all of them from Lane Bryant, because again, Tor did not exist. And
yes,
if you wanted sort of dramatic clothes of any kind, that was the only place really you had to go. Avenue was what existed of Avenue was just not that. I mean, it was basically is t-shirts and pants and basic stuff, I mean, to, you know, clothe your nakedness, but not
there
something.
There was a lot of elastic waisted stuff.
Yeah, a lot of, and in fairness, there still is. And I think that's, you know, I don't want to say everyone has a, you know, sort of responsibility to dress outrageously or dramatically or stylishly. I'm not trying to put that on people at all. But for me, that just wasn't, it wasn't making it for me. And the only place I really had to go was either scouring local vintage shops like the Garment District in Cambridge, or I would go to Lane Bryant, and that was pretty much the extent. And I lived in Boston, and that was the extent of my resources at the time. And I pulled out all of these clothes, and like you said, they were, you know, they were like size 18 pants that would fit me when I was wearing a 26.
Yeah.
In sort of current standards. So that was weird. And also, I mean, it was true that everything was just sort of, I mean, a lot of this stuff I had worn to death, and it still looked, I mean, admittedly, it was also all made out of like polyester that wears like iron. But still, I mean, it did, you know, it got me through a long period of time. And the other thing, too, that was interesting, and I don't know if this was your experience, but during the hippening of Lane Bryant, I found my personal style being influenced by what was available to me.
Hugely.
So if Lane Bryant was, like, all about stripes, then, okay, I am all about stripes now. And I would do my best, and obviously I'm further down the road now, and I feel like I've gotten really good at taking limited resources and making them sort of unique in me. But I would, you know, try my best to sort of make them different. But I mean, the reality is Lane Bryant was dressing me.
Yeah.
You know?
And I worked at Lane Bryant, and I had a 35% discount as a college student. That was the only place I bought clothes.
Yeah.
Ever. Unless I found something interesting at Thrift Co.
Yeah.
You know, and it was. That's how I wound up with, like, powder blue sweaters and weird shit. It's not really weird. It was weird for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was also, I think, I mean, it was very much a business decision, but it had the interesting political side effect of being a very fat accepting atmosphere.
Yeah.
Like, my manager was a size 4.
Wow.
But she was so into the idea that plus size women could wear attractive clothing that made them feel good and that made them attractive. And I mean, it was all very like nascent fat acceptance, but working in this environment, you know, it was your job to help people find clothes that they loved. And that was such a novel experience for so many of our customers even. And we would get sometimes sample garments. They were also, Lane Bryant, maybe not in Boston so much, but in Florida, was pushing the hell out of the sleeveless thing. And we got like, you know, to pick out a little sleeveless shirt. And so that we could wear it and people could see. And it was amazing to see just how universal the like the fear of baring people's arms were. I'm like, you wear a 14-16, I wear a 22-24 at that time. You know, if you are standing there saying that my arms look fine, you can wear this. You know, it became this sort of environment where we were urging people towards clothing bravery.
And I think too, I think it really worked because I know in my experience at the time, going to Lane Bryant, not so much anymore, but going to Lane Bryant back then was almost weirdly therapeutic, was to be able to go into this place where I knew things would fit, where I knew there would be sort of cool and unusual stuff that I would like. And I developed a habit, which would, you know, lead to my closet collapsing eventually, of if and I say this in all seriousness, for years, if I found something unusual, even if I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with it, but I found it in my size, I would buy it. And I would just sort of hoard it. And I had so many, and I discovered this, I'm still discovering this stuff even today, where, you know, I will keep something because I like it, but not because I ever have any intentions of actually wearing it. It almost becomes this weird collection as opposed to these are the clothes that I wear to not get arrested for indecency. It becomes as much about these are the remarkable and rare things that I have collected in my lifetime of being a plus size person. And
In
I
the
it really and part of that I think honestly was influenced by that culture that Lane Bryant created.
In the super early days of the Fashionista Live Journal community, and I know this not because I was a member at the time, but because I read back through all of the archives when I joined, because I'm a nerd. There was this conversation about that sort of like phenomenon, this idea that plus size women in particular will hoard things, not because they find it remarkable and stylish and they love it, but because it fits and because that alone makes it valuable. You have all of these things that maybe aren't your style, maybe don't fit quite right, but it still fits. And so you hold on to it and you keep it. And that's why cleaning out the closet is such a scary prospect for some people. And I honestly think that's one reason it's so hard to find plus size vintage and used clothing. Because you don't get rid of stuff. You wear that shit until it falls off your body.
Yeah, that the hoarding conversation was always sort of fascinating to me, and we had it lots and lots of times, and I've since, you know, written long posts about it on fashionista.com that, you know, there's almost this idea that I have to buy this and I have to keep it because I don't know if I'll ever find it again. And if you're not plus sized and you find a black dress that you like and it looks good on you, well, you're probably going to wear it and enjoy it and, you know, go about your life, and eventually it will not be in such good condition, and you'll donate it or throw it out, and then you'll go out and you'll buy another black dress.
Or you'll decide you have enough black dresses and you don't need that particular black dress.
Exactly. And with as a when as a plus size person, it's not always that easy that, you know, if I'm looking, if I have it in my head, I want, which I don't, I'm just using this as an example, I want a denim shirt dress for, you know, the summer. I don't know why I just came up with that, but whatever. Say I decide I want a denim short dress for the summer. Let's say denim short dresses are all the fucking rage right now.
It's
Everyone is
because you've been
wearing.
reading the Eshakti
Yeah, I probably, yeah. They're in my freaking brain. Like there's a chip. There's an
emails,
Eshakti chip that's like, beep, 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 beep. You need to buy something.
isn't it? Leslie wants lightweight denim ruffles.
But
Make it so.
let's say, you know, denim short dresses are the hot trend and you want one. and you wear a size 26 or a 28 or even a 30, and so it's not like you can just go on the internet and be like fat denim shirt dress and you have a bunch of them pop up. If you're lucky, if you find one, even if the something that you're looking for is incredibly trendy right now, you may
Yeah.
be lucky to find one, and the one that you find, the proportions may be all off. It might not actually be available in your size. It might be too
And it might
expensive.
cost $9.
Exactly. It might be too expensive, or it might be cheap and a piece of crap that will fall apart after two wearings. This is part of why we get into the whole fashion as is political,
It
because
might be a piece of crap that will fall apart after two washings and still cost $90. Like, it's not
Exactly.
either or. It's like this confluence
Of crap.
of substandard
Yeah.
options.
And that's why, I mean, I think there is a panic, and I think this is part of why, occasionally we'll have, like, when fat vintage stuff turns up on in Sales Post on the Live Journal Fashionista, there it's like a feeding frenzy, because that's a situation, as you said before, where you can be pretty much freaking certain you will never have that opportunity again. If a good condition 1960s house dress shows up and it fits a 26 or a 28, you may go the rest of your life and not find one that will fit you again, because fat vintage is just so unbelievably rare. And I
I have
think
a 1960s or 70s Lane Bryant, like super polyester vintage dress that I bought from Deb at the Brooklyn Flea before she even had redress. And I have worn it once in 2 years. And I did pay a ridiculous amount of money for it. But there was no way in hell I would ever find anything like it ever again
Yeah.
that fits me as a size 28. I was just like, I don't even care what it costs. I am buying this.
Yeah. Because it's one of those opportunities that you just, particularly if you care about clothes, if you've, sort of looked longingly at vintage options before, knowing that, wow, none of this will ever fit me. I mean, it won't even come close. It's not even like, oh, I can have this altered to fit me, that it's just hopelessly not gonna fit. And that's stuff that, that's part of why, I am a huge clothes hoarder, and I'm actually gotten a lot better in recent years. The closet collapsing story, the short version, is that on Thanksgiving of last year, I had my whole family here and my husband's family here, and my closet fell down. And by fell down, I mean everything in the closet, the rod and the shelves and everything, just tore out of the wall and collapsed in a very sad heap on the floor. And it was kind of devastating. I remember walking in there and I felt like someone had punched me in the stomach. That, I just, Dennis actually, my husband called me, and my husband was in the bedroom, went in there for something, and he's like, Leslie, you need to come in here. And he had this very calm note in his voice and like, oh my God, something horrible has happened. And I go in there and I swear I just stood there with my mouth hanging open. For I couldn't, I don't know if I should cry. I don't know, what am I going to do with all my clothes? My closet is dead. It was pretty horrifying. And even looking at, like, as I was picking everything up and find and like stacking it on the futon in the guest room, I'm looking at some of this stuff thinking, wow, I forgot I had this. Or like, wow, I haven't worn this dress in 4 years. I mean, that it was sort of crazy. And I remember thinking, like, I need to get rid of this stuff. But then after I rebuilt my closet, which is much better and bigger and stronger and awesome now,
Does it make that little bionic
it does. Every time I open the doors, it goes ding 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 ding. That was the plan.
you move in slow motion when you open the door?
I do. I totally do. But yeah, no. But I mean, it's true that when the time came to move everything into the new and improved closet, which now is like bi-level and is held into the wall by like 100 million bolts and screws, even when the time came and I'm thinking, oh yeah, I was gonna get rid of this, or oh yeah, I was gonna donate this, or oh yeah, I was gonna see if anybody, on my friends list wanted this, I couldn't do it. And I sort of was like, okay, I'm gonna fold this stuff up and I'm gonna stick it in like a box, and then, hopefully I'll be able to get out of this thing in my head where I have to keep this stuff forever. And it's been sitting in that box since like December. And I have this block where I think about getting rid of it. I'm like, I don't know if I can.
You
Like
can
it
send that
feels
box to me.
I could. I've thought about that because I trust you. But
I
it
would
is,
probably give the stuff back.
it's weird how personally invested I am in it. And some of the dresses, admittedly, are dresses that I made, which are, obviously I have a little more of a personal connection. I'm like, oh,
Yeah.
but I made it. But yeah, still, it's really, really bizarre that like even like old blue plate dresses that I just, haven't worn in years and have no intention of ever wearing again. And I think, but I might need it someday.
Yeah.
Like blue plate might go out of business because this is a real thing to worry about. Or
Yeah.
they might stop making dresses in a 4X that fit me,
Yes.
and which again, a lot of companies will, cut back on extended sizing.
That's why
And
the Old Navy thing was like crushing.
yeah.
When they pulled plus sizes out of stores, like I'm like, I still can't order from them like online. Like I've held this grudge.
Yeah, that was stuff. I it's funny because I was never a huge fan of Old Navy, as is probably apparent. But even I won't order from them. And I used to get like cardigans and
Yeah.
stuff from them on occasion, like basic, crap that it's nice to have someplace like Old Navy that you can be like, oh, I need a green cardigan, and you can
Yeah.
know whatever the time of year is, no matter what, they will have a green cardigan. It will probably be $15.
The things that I needed, like just super basic stuff that you can't always walk into Lane Bryant or Avenue and find. I knew I could go to Old Navy and find a black t-shirt.
Right.
I knew I could go to Old Navy and find, a jersey dress.
For me, it was always workout gear.
Yeah.
That
Oh, hell
gym,
yeah.
all of my gym clothes came from Old Navy, and actually to this day, they have all come from Old Navy. And I actually had to go and buy a couple of new gym pants because my old ones were just getting sort of ratty looking because they're jersey, and I hate jersey, and it gets pilly over time. And I was really angry and resentful about having to go on the website and order some stupid black jersey yoga pants to go to the gym in because, I felt like, you stupid assholes, I hate giving you my money, but I have no freaking choice. And it's not like boycotts really work anyway. It's not like I think, oh, I'm going to change their mind by not shopping there. It's I resent that they can say, fuck you, fat people, we're not going to cater to you in stores anymore. And I have to say, yes, please, sir, may I have another?
You still have to suck it up and shop there. And like that's where the politics, I think, of plus size clothing get really frustrating and angry making for me, because I would prefer to shop, it from stores that, made their clothes in factories that paid workers a living wage, that had, ethically produced fabrics that paid all their employees a living wage. You
Yeah.
know, all of these sort of ethical business concerns, but I also need pants to wear to work.
Yeah.
And where does that compromise line get drawn? Well, at the end of the day, I still need pants to wear to work. And so I can say what I want to about Lane Bryant's business practices, but they're one of the few places where pants will fit me.
And that's been a frequent, and I've always been fascinated when these conversations happen in the LiveJournal Fashionista, where someone will post a rant about how much they hate Lane Bryant, and inevitably someone will come along and comment and say, all of these people talk about how much they hate Lane Bryant, but then, every outfit post is full of stuff from Lane Bryant. Which, yeah, that's true, because, I can hate the company and I can hate their crap. That doesn't mean I have a grand array simply by virtue of not liking what they do, that I have this tremendous array of alternatives to go to. It's like,
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of criticism going back to eShakti. I know there's a lot of criticism of them that, their customer service is sort of, it's I've never had a problem with their customer service, but I've been like a crazy good customer of theirs for a long time, and I have a
You've got that
blog.
chip.
Yeah, and exactly, I have a chip in my head. And I have a blog that has sort of, not intentionally, I've never gotten anything for free from them, but has, promoted their stuff many times. So I think I probably pop up on their radar when I need help, and they get back to me right away.
They're totally aware of you too because
Yeah.
of the whole like Flickr thing. Like,
Exactly. So I haven't had customer service issues with them, but a lot of people have. And it's not, even having said that, though, it's not as easy as saying, well, I'm just not going to shop there anymore for a lot of us. For some people, yeah, you can say that and you have other places locally or online that you can go and be perfectly happy. For me, I mean, I wear a 26 or a 28, depending. There are really, really very few places that I can go besides, I mean, these days I hate pretty much everything at Lane Bryant. I have zero luck at Torrid because their fit sort of sloper or whatever is just completely in antithesis to how I'm shaped. So even if something fits my waist and my hips, then it's enormous in the boobs, and you know I'm not gonna buy a dress at Torrid and have it altered. I just refuse to do that. So you know, I mean, my options are pretty limited for places, so I keep going back to eShopty, even knowing that yeah, occasionally like I'll place an order and I won't hear from them for like 2 weeks, and then I'll send an email and you know be like, hey, I was just wondering, and they're oh, it's shipping today.
It's always shipping
Yeah, like,
today.
oh, we're really sorry. And it's like, well, was it sitting in a box somewhere? Like, were you just waiting to hear from me? Like, oh, maybe she'll
Waiting
forget
for
she
you
ordered
to
this. Did you miss me? Is this manipulative on your part? Like, you break up with someone and you keep some of their stuff so they'll come back.
Oh, you'll know you aren't breaking up with Ishakti though.
No, I'm really
As
not. I
long
mean,
as they Yeah,
they.
as long as they make ruffle dresses.
Seriously, as long as they make ruffle dresses. But no, I mean, it's sort of astounding to me how much of my wardrobe is made because I only wear dresses. Dresses are hard to come by a lot of the year, particularly in the not spring and summer parts of the year. And yeah, I mean, it's a great reliable resource for me for stuff that actually fits me and that is pretty reasonably priced and in my experience is extremely well made.
Oh,
That
yeah.
I had one dress from them that had like a wonky hemline. And I sent it back, and you know, there was no hassle. They sent me a replacement, and that was that. So, you know, I mean, that's considering, you know, all things considered, I'm pretty committed to them as a company, but not necessarily because I think that they're awesome to me, as I think, well, this is the resource that I have. Like, would I rather have a resource that, you know, is a little more responsive with customer service? Yeah. Would I rather have a resource that is more consistently awesome across the board to everyone who orders from them? Absolutely. But I don't have that resource.
Yeah. I feel that way about Torrid right now. Like I can walk into Torrid and it's ridiculous. Like I am on the outskirts of the Torrid demographic. I'm 32 and they are still my sort of go-to. I need something reasonably fashionable that is not as overpriced as some of the other overpriced options.
Yeah.
You know, and I can go into Torrid and I can every single time leave with something if I were of that mindset. And I think that the really sort of cool thing that has happened over the past 10 years is that I can go to Torrid, I can go to Lane Bryant, I can go to Avenue. I have three stores locally, and that is an improvement. Like that it blows my mind because 10 years ago I could go to Lane Bryant and that was it.
Yeah.
And I mean,
Well, this
I
is.
prefer to shop in brick and mortar stores because sizing does tend to be so crazy, but I have three options. Like that blows my mind sometimes. And then I think about how incredibly sad it is that I'm like, if I drive all over town to these different locations because there is no one mall with all three stores, then I can shop at three different places. Oh, crazy.
It's true. I mean, it's a running joke at work because I do all of my shopping online. I prefer to shop online. I sort of resent brick and mortar stores. I think because partly probably because of the same reasons that you like them. I hate trying stuff on. I hate the prospect of going and driving around to these places and then coming home empty-handed. Whereas if I just sit down and look at the internet for long enough, I will probably find what I'm looking for.
I
And
truly resent paying for shipping, and I truly, truly resent paying for shipping fucking twice, which is why I don't exchange anything online. If I get something and it doesn't fit, it's going back and fuck them. Like, I'm not going to switch out sizes and be hit with shipping three or four times. I can't afford an extra, you know, $20 to $30 to $40
Well,
just for the privilege of having something mailed to me.
The running joke at my office is, that I get a ridiculous number of packages comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
And I've often sort of, it's part of you just bust people's chops at work. I mean, we're a very friendly office. But it's also partly I've tried to explain that, you also have to understand I don't buy stuff anywhere else. I don't buy underwear in a store. I don't buy dresses in a store. I don't buy cardigans in a store. I don't even buy like tights in a store. I buy and even shoes I don't buy in a store. I get everything online and I have it shipped to me. And so it's what's funny is that the joke is that oh Leslie shops so much and yes Leslie does shop a whole freaking lot. That is absolutely true. But what actually the resulting sort of garments that I get, I don't get any more than someone who can walk into Target and find like a couple of cardigans and a pair of jeans and some socks. I just don't do that because nothing at Target tends to fit me, at least at my Target, because they have like one rack with plus size crap on it and it's always garbage.
And the rest of it is maternity
Exactly. Which, I mean,
or straight size clearance.
and I can fit a lot of the maternity stuff at Target, and I just want to throw that out there that, for people who are at more appley shaped, do not discount maternity. No one has to know it's maternity if you would be embarrassed by that. It might fit you and it might be awesome because it will be cut for, room in the belly, which for those of us without an hourglass shape, can be a freaking godsend to have that, sort of special dispensation.
Yeah, I get a little upset about the maternity stuff because it doesn't fit me, and I'm like encroaching.
But one thing I wanted to sort of maybe wrap up on here is I want to talk a little bit about fashion as visibility
Yes.
and how that is part of the political nature of that. That I mean I would or if I wanted to be really sort of grad student-y about this, I would argue that, part of why it's so hard to find trendy, interesting looking clothing in fat sizes is because fat people aren't supposed to be looked at. They're supposed to sort of blend and not draw attention.
I
And
don't think you have to be grad student-y to say that, though. I mean,
well, it's
we have that tendency to try to disappear because that's what we're told we should do.
exactly. It sounds sometimes now that I'm so far from grad school, sometimes those kinds of arguments sound kind of conspiracy theory-ish to me. I don't think it's necessarily a conscious thing. I think it's just an artifact of culture that culturally this is something that is put upon us, and as a result, it's coming from both ends. On the one hand, these clothes aren't available because people aren't demanding them because they don't think they should be looked at, and on the other hand, they're not available because culture dictates that they're not supposed to be looked at. So it's not like we have a bunch of fat people clamoring for awesome look at me clothing and an industry that's saying, no, you don't get those things. It's coming from, there's this mutual sort of force pushing down on these kinds of options, these really sort of stylish and eye-catching options.
There's also the sort of facet of it where a lot of people will say, well, I don't want to be political, I just want to get dressed. But anytime you are visible it's a political action.
Absolutely.
And I feel like we don't have any choice, really. I mean, your body is a political object when you are fat, particularly the fatter you get. And so fashion cannot help but be political because that is the sort of medium you use to, medium meaning method rather than size, that you use to communicate your visibility to people. I mean, we talk about clothes being self-expression all the time, but it is limited by what's available, what you can do with it. What is Lane Bryant selling this season? So your ability to express yourself is limited by what is available and really sort of constrained by that.
It's true. It's true. I think one interesting example of that really sort of fascinated me was when you were on Nightline and everyone was in black.
That was great.
except for you and I think the moderator, but all of the other guests were wearing black.
Juju
And
Chang wore black pants and an orange jacket that was really cool and pinned in the back. Like her clothes were very precisely pinned.
wow.
Yeah.
And that's just so sort of it, that's a scenario in which you would expect the fat person to be in black because we're constantly told that black is slimming and you want to sort of look as small as possible on television. And of course Marianne shows up in color and everyone else is in black. I just thought that was hilarious, and I think it was such a I it was a weird little culture jamming thing that I don't think anyone could have planned or intended. But it got to perform in that way just by wonderful coincidence.
Well, when you go on television, they send you the list of things that look good on television. Like they don't say, oh, you should wear pants and this kind of top. They say you should avoid busy prints. You know, these particular colors don't read well on camera. Black tends to look like this. And like black is one of those colors they consistently advise against. And black is one of those colors that people show up wearing all the time. Like it's hard to pick up detail. Like it's one reason I don't photograph a lot of my outfits, because if I'm wearing all black, well, it's just a black square with my head on it. You know, that's all the detail, all the outfit detail you're going to get, no matter how cute it looks in person. You know, it just doesn't read as well. And so I was actually kind of shocked when I showed up and everyone was in black. I was like, did they not get the same memo? You know, and then I went and had kind of the same experience on Dr. Phil. You know, you get the don't wear black, red bleeds like crazy, blah, blah, blah. And I get there and everybody's in black. I'm like, I really don't understand this. And like, thankfully, Erica was wearing like bright teal and Kelly Osbourne was wearing color. But there was
Well,
so much like all black clothing going on that I was kind of floored.
I think black is really sort of a color that people feel safe in, that it looks sort of professional. It's not distracting. It because it makes it hard to see detail, it makes it hard. Your the shape contained within the black becomes sort of nondescript
Yeah.
to an extent, and I think that people sort of fall back on that because it's a color that's safe. Now, I don't want to say that people who are black all the time are doing it because they're hiding. I actually spent wow, and this will probably shock people, up until like 2000, oh, I would say like 2006. 2004, 2005. I wore nothing but black every day of my life, to the extent that when people would like reference me, like, "Oh, Leslie, her curly hair wears black all the time." That was how people would be like, "Oh yeah, Leslie wears black all the time. I know who she is." That was it. Almost became this sort of signature color that everything. I mean, I would open my closet and it was like Johnny Cash. It was just like black. There was this, that was all that was there. There was no color. There was nothing else. Like I didn't even have like a white bra or a white tank top. Everything was black.
I'm looking at my closet now and nodding in agreement. I've got like black, 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 obnoxious orange, black, black, black. So, like, I have in recent years trended towards the obnoxious as well as the all black, but I totally understand where you're coming from.
For me, though, it
The goth
wasn't.
club is where you're coming from.
I was
Because
coming
that's
from
where I'm
that.
coming from as well.
But that was also, it was also for me, because this was even, in a point where I was actively working in fat acceptance. And for me, it was as much a question of not so much of black allowing me to disappear, as head to toe black is really dramatic. And it does tend to make an impression on people such that they're like, oh, yeah, that girl in all the black. And that was really why I kept it up for so long, because I did consider it a signature thing that people remembered about me, that Leslie, very cheerful, upbeat person, but she dresses like she's going to a funeral all the time. I mean, a true story, like when my sister-in-law got married, I had this like breakdown because I knew I had to buy a dress that was not black. And I remember going to Lane Bryant and they had these horrifying, this was not a good year for Lane Bryant, these horrifying, like the only dresses they had were these, like, you might even remember these. They were like, they were sort of like a spaghetti strap thing, and they had like this mesh overlay that had like some stupid ass print on it, and they went down to like ankle length. It was like a fucking nightgown, basically.
Wow.
And they had one that was like pink and red, and one that was like in sort of these muted blues. And I'm like, well, blue is kind of like black. And I wound up buying this blue dress, which I hated, and wearing to this wedding because I had nothing else. And I literally wore it to the wedding and threw it in a box, and I think donated it like a week later because I knew I would never wear it again. And that was a major thing for me because, you know, and I've obviously I have a huge investment in my sense of personal style, as anyone who knows anything about me will be aware. So being in this situation where I had to break with my standard, I'm wearing all black regalia, you know, mode of operating was really distressing to me. Like the whole time I was at the wedding, I didn't feel like myself.
Yeah.
I felt really uncomfortable, and I felt like I was wearing someone else's clothes.
Yeah. I have been there and done that, and it's so it really is disconcerting. And suddenly you're spending more time conscious of the sort of identity games that you are playing instead of focusing on the event that you're at.
Exactly. And it really is, it really does illustrate how political the things we wear are, particularly when we have an investment in fashion and in style, that when you take that away from those of us who take that really seriously and consider it an important part of our expression to the world, it's very depressing. And it's almost like someone is sort of, you know, removing your identity or removing your agency from you for the length of time that you have to wear whatever it is you have to wear that is not what you're comfortable wearing.
It's one of the things that occasionally really frustrates me with some people who are, like, to circle back to the beginning of our conversation, who are on that cusp, who can shop in straight size stores and plus size stores. And I know that there is this like gulf where sometimes people just can't find anything because most straight size stores cut on a junior model
Yep.
and plus size stores cut on a like woman's model, which is the most ridiculous nomenclature. Like, woman's model. That's what the W after some sizes used to
Yeah.
mean.
Although I like to think it means wide.
I used to, when I was a kid, I thought it meant that. And I was like mortified as a child that I was wearing like a 14W. But now I'm like, oh man, that's so fucking cool. But it's one of those things that does occasionally bother me as a larger plus size woman to hear someone who's a size 12 sort of lamenting their fatness as they wear Dorothy Perkins in Anthropology and talk about how you just have to find stretchy stuff and make it work. And I'm like, there's no way that that garment has enough stretch in it to fit my ass.
Yeah.
And so that like real true problem of availability means that we kind of have, especially on the larger end, you kind of have to develop your own sense of style. You do not get to be trendy
Exactly.
because there is no accessibility. I mean, I can sometimes put together enough things to make a certain look work, but by the time I've collected all the pieces, the trend is past. That ship has sailed. You know, by the time Torrid got around to making leggings, everybody else had been wearing
Yeah.
leggings. You know, the wide stretchy belt thing that I never really got into anyway, but and you cannot take my leggings away from me. But it becomes almost futile to even try to follow any sort of trendy style because you're not going to be able to do it at like my size. I
Yeah.
mean, you could if you make all of your own stuff, but I don't have that kind of time.
Yeah, I sort of I have I'm really ambivalent about the whole make it work philosophy. because I agree that, yeah, people should be open-minded about sizes and things that they think that they should wear. And you should always be willing to try something on because you might be surprised. But at the same time, I also get really resentful when I, read all of these exhortations to, sure, go to, I don't know, H&M, and just, some of their stuff is really
Oh,
stretchy and
God.
try it on. Right. You know what? It ain't gonna work for me. Nothing is that stretchy that
Yeah.
there's no way, particularly not anything. I mean, maybe I might be able to find like a shrug or a cardigan that will fit over my giant arms and shoulders, maybe. But, that's unless I'm specifically looking for a cardigan or a shrug, I'm not gonna go into H&M and just sort of randomly peruse the racks in the feeble hope that I'm going to find something. And also, part of my issue with that is for people who are sort of in the in-between range, I think it's great advice because you should go into lots of stores and try lots of stuff on because you never know what you're,
100%.
what's going to succeed for you. But hang on one second. Sorry, another cough. What frustrates me too, that's sort of analogous to that, is that for me to go into a store like H&M that is so obviously not sized for me, that I am so blatantly and unavoidably outsized to be in that store, there's a weird discomfort with that.
Well, I
Even
don't think it's weird at all. There's a discomfort with that because you get attitude from the sales clerks, you get looks from the other shoppers. You are in, I hate to use the term hostile environment, but you are in a hostile environment. It's not set up in any way, shape, or form to be welcoming to you as a shopper.
And I think too, I think you're absolutely right. And I think too, there's an element for a lot of us who have grown up fat of sort of bad memories of going
Yeah.
shopping for like school clothes and going from store to store to store and having nothing fit.
Or
And
going shopping with thinner friends and
right, and
standing
knowing
and waiting.
or looking at purses the whole time and pretending because, and I don't know about you, and but I, in my case, like a lot of times my friends were just oblivious that, like they just didn't know that nothing in the store would fit me.
Yeah.
So I would have the added bonus of, trying socially to fit in. So I wouldn't say anything about that. I'd pretend that, oh yeah, I shop there all the time. And I would be in this weird position of like, well, I'm gonna just stare at accessories for an hour and a half while
I
the
had a
rest of you
lot
guys
of earrings.
And that sort of allows me to, would allow me to can, participate socially without having to make myself make it obvious as a teenager when you're already so unsure of yourself and you're already so freaking insecure to also make myself even more of an outsider by being like, nothing here fits me. And I know that there are today, there are lots of teenage, fat teenage girls who will stand up and say, you know what, I don't want to go to that store because nothing there fits me. And I think that is awesome.
I think that's,
I think it's
yeah.
amazing that younger and younger people are finding fat acceptance and finding the confidence to sort of stand up and be overt and be loud about it. At the time that I was doing it, though, that just like it was like a secret. It was, my being too fat for the store was just something that wasn't supposed to be talked about.
Because it's not like they could go into a different store with you.
Exactly.
Either. I mean, there was no solution to that. Either you didn't go or you stood there for half an hour.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm really glad as well that there are occasionally stores that have a full range of sizes.
Yes.
Dots may make like the cheapest, crappiest clothes ever, but they make them from a size 2 to a size 26.
Yeah. And
And
so kids can go in and shop there together. And Deb is the same way that, yeah,
yeah.
it's cheap, crappy, trendy clothing. But, these are the kind of stores that I wish were around when I was that age, because at that age, I would have gone in and absolutely loved every minute of looking at the cheap, crappy, trendy clothes and knowing that, my friends are right over at that rack and I can go to this rack and it's all of this stuff will actually be available in my size as well. So if
That
someone
was
pulls out a dress, in a two and Sarah four or whatever and says, hey, Leslie, this would look great on you, I just have to go and find it in my size because I know it exists.
Yeah. And that was one of the really empowering things about Old Navy was that I could go in with my best friend and my husband, and then we could all three go to the fitting rooms with clothes. Because they have men's clothes and they have straight size clothes and they had plus size clothes. And for once it was a normal shopping experience. And oh, I'm so bitter.
You're mad about that.
I am. I mean, I think that they handed something to people and then I'm not just mad that they took it away. I'm mad about the way they took it away, as though we should be grateful that they were still carrying stuff online, even though we had to pay for shipping and you can't return it in the stores.
Which you'll notice they rolled all that out very slowly, which I think added to part of the anger because it's like, well, okay, not only do you not want fat people in your stores, but apparently you also think we're very stupid and won't sort of put together that, because, yeah, we have to pay for shipping. And then for a while you could get it and take it to the store and you wouldn't, at least you wouldn't have to pay return shipping.
But
But
that's if you could
now,
find somebody at the store who knew
who
what to do
knew
with it.
exactly, who knew how to accept it. And now it's just flat out no returns to the store. You pay for shipping to you pay for shipping back. We don't really give a crap about your business. I mean, that's basically what it says to me.
Yeah, and the sort of like logic that people at Old Navy gave in return when people were complaining w was another thing. There was definitely this idea of, being patted on the head. Oh no, your business is so important. We just couldn't make it work. I'm like, well, you didn't advertise it. I mean, Old Navy advertises the hell out of everything, and I never once
No.
saw them mention plus sizes.
And they tended to hide them, and the fit of the plus size stuff was horrifying. That, and I don't mean like just it was, the an individual fit was bad. I mean it was incredibly unpredictable. That, you would have two things, the same item, both in like a 24, and one would be massive and one would be really small. And this was sort of like, this was just a quality control issue that I know made a lot of people very angry about that. And,
Because you can't order anything reliably from the website.
exactly. And I mean, so it's one thing if you can go to the store and find which 26 is going to fit you, but it's something else altogether when you're stuck, ordering the stuff online and you think, well, I don't know, is this going to be a big 26 or is this going to be a small 26? Or maybe I should just make sure I only buy stuff that is stretchy so that, and maybe size down so that if it's big, it will still fit me. And I mean, these are the hoops that we have to jump through in our heads in order to place an order at this point.
And then you have to wait for
Right.
it. Like you go through all of this indignity and then you still have to wait, 6 to 8 days if you've paid for the decent shipping before you go through the agony, I guess, of trying it on and discovering what doesn't fit and, well, shit, I did order this too large and this isn't as stretchy as I thought and now that doesn't work in the boobs, but it's enormous in the hips and how is this even possible in one garment? Like their clothes are so improbable.
They really
And it's like, this is a 3X and it's really too large and this is a 4X and it's really too small and I don't understand. And somehow it always, I think because we do have that sort of culturally ingrained, this is our fault, it always feels like it is my fault for not being smart enough to order the right sizes in
For
the
not
right
being, yeah,
way.
not being able to magically intuit which size is going to work for you. Well, I just ordered when I ordered my workout pants from Old Navy, I figured, well, what the hell, I'm paying for shipping, I'll grab a couple of cardigans. And I wound up, because I didn't like any of the plus size cardigans they had, I wound up grabbing a couple of cardigans in an XXL from their regular straight size section. And said cardigans arrived. And now I have bought XXL cardigans at Old Navy for a while, so I knew, I was relatively sure they'd probably fit as long as they're not like tiny fit or whatever that ridiculous expression they use is. And they arrive, and the cardigans are freaking massive. Like they're like these sacks of just, fine knit cotton. And I was, I'm really pissed off about it. Because when I'm ordering, I'm thinking to myself, well, it's an XXL. I know, I mean, I can deal with particularly something that's cotton and knit that will stretch. I can deal with it being a little, like maybe half a size small, which normally the XXL would be. Because, it'll stretch, and as I wear it, it'll stretch out a little bit. I mean, clothes get used to your body as you wear them and wash them. So, I wasn't too, I thought to myself, well, it might be a little snug to start, but it'll, work out eventually. And they were on sale, so it wasn't like it was a huge amount of money. And then they arrive, and they're like these shapeless sack cardigans. And I was so angry about it. Like, what the hell, Old Navy? Like, this is your bread and butter, man. Like, these are normal sizes. I'm not even, getting all fat up in your face, and you can't even get this right.
I do kind of
This whole
I am
podcast has turned into like a rant about Old Navy. Like, how did
I
that happen?
know. I just and like fond nostalgic memories of Lane Bryant and anger at Old Navy. We're gonna have to rewrite the synopsis for this one.
I actually think we should probably, because we're getting to the end, we should
Yeah,
probably
we should
close
wrap
this
this up.
out. And I'm going to propose that we actually do a part two on the subject too, because there were some things we haven't talked about. We haven't really talked about the accessibility issue. We haven't really talked about the class issue.
And I definitely want to talk about the class issue, particularly when it comes to resale.
Exactly. So I think we should do a part two that is a little more serious and a little less ranty. I mean, this is good. We wanted to have something lighthearted following the doctor one, so this serves that purpose. And so we'll do a part two where we sort of talk more about the less wow, we're angry about fat aspects, and more about the actual sort of why this is important and why. It's easy for Marianne and I to sort of complain about we can only go to Lane Bryant and Avenue and whatever, where there are people who can't go to any of those places. And that's really something worth talking about. So,
I also kind of want to touch on the idea that fat girls have the best accessories
yeah, I love that
as sort
one.
of tangential to that.
I love that one.
Me too.
All right, so you have been listening to FatCast. This is episode 4, and I am Leslie Kinzel.
I'm Marianne Kirby.
And thanks for listening, and we'll have part two for you next week. Thanks, bye. You have been listening to FatCast, episode 4. The music you've heard in this podcast is by Revolution Void. FatCast is shared with you under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike license.